Here we go. The 2016 Australian Grand Prix. Three rounds to go of this incredible world championship here at Phillip Island.
Hello, and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 513 for Wednesday, the 26th of October, 2016. My name is Harry Lloyd. I am coming to you semi-live, live and away, from Reading. And joining me once again, it's now, I think, at least two shows back-to-back, is Dave Neal. Dave, how are you on this fine, fine British evening?
Harry, good evening. Really good, thank you. Yeah, hello to the M4 corridor, roughly where you're situated, down in the southern portion of the UK, while I sort of languish on the banks of the River Trent in the sort of central northern England, for those of you who really give a crap where we are geographically wise. Yeah, it's all good, mate. It's been a bit of a strange day, so I've just come off night shift, so I'm a little bit suffering with the post-night shift fog. Sometimes it hits, sometimes it doesn't. And today it's hit like a sledgehammer. A couple of times that really... Dave, you should have stayed in bed today. There was no point in getting up because it's just been a bit of a clusterfuck at times. Now, this is a little story as in true Martin Dollington style. We'll start off on a little bit of a tangent. I have, because of my domestic situation, I don't have Sky or anything like that, cable TV, that sort of thing. So I rely on my little Android box, which is Kodi. For guys that know about it, they'll know about Kodi and the little apps that go with it. Now, my little Android box works fine. Excuse me while I cough. Excuse me. But it loses sound. So I've been frustratedly trying to find the source of the loss of sound and trying to find out through forums and everything else, and Twitter. And by the power of Twitter, I sent a message to one of the Kodi Twitter feeds and said, look, guys, can you help me out? I've got it on the main menu, but I've got no sound on Kodi. And I just got a message back from one guy saying, press the blue button. Now, the blue button on my remote control says Vol Plus.
That would help, probably.
In 15 months of having this little box, I've never pressed any of those buttons, so I didn't even know they worked. So I just sat there like, mate, if you need me, I shall be in the corner dying of embarrassment. And then on Twitter,
it's not like it was on social media where anybody who follows you could potentially see that. So
it is all there in all its glory for everyone to see at Dave Neal. Yes, you can follow the threads, and it's me like, Jesus Christ, you know. Why did I even bother? I should have just pressed the blue button. So if anybody has any problems with anything in life, just press the blue button. It always, not the red button. Red button, don't press the red button. Press the blue button. And then to top it off, I wish somebody happy birthday on Twitter, and it was the wrong person in the feed, and it happened to be Smith's BMW mechanic, Stevie Dewick's birthday. So Stevie, happy birthday to you, mate. Not Emma Sullivan's birthday, who I misread the tweet completely. So it's been a good start. So if I start waffling more shit than normal on the show, then please forgive the post night shift fog. But we did manage to watch a little bit of racing over the weekend. Yes. And I think I'll perk up as time goes through on the podcast. So but we're here, that is the main thing. And also here are our new donators and new subscribers, Darren Marshall, Marty Parker, new subscribers. Thank you very much indeed for that. And thanks to the continued support of James Dewitt, John Michael Allen, Christopher Court, and Neiman Bean. Thank you very much indeed. You can find the donations on www.motopodcast.com. Left hand side, about halfway down, you can either donate or subscribe. Anything down the back of the settee helps us with running costs, helps us with interviews. Martin's out in Qatar this weekend, so hopefully he'll come back with a hatful of interviews for us. And also to round out the show later on, he's got a fantastic interview with the Pedicini Kawasaki World Superbike rider Said Al Sulaiti. So I'm quite looking forward to that one because he's quite an interesting character.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, as we always
sorry, man, I thought you'd fallen asleep then.
No. I was a bit surprised that someone other than me actually did that intro. So thank you for that, for you know, giving me the other side of what it's like. As we said, Said, you know, really interesting character. And you know, as we always say on Motopod, you know, they're the sort of riders that we really like to interview, because you know, he probably is going to have a pretty interesting story. And, you know, not to knock Jorge Lorenzo, but Jorge Lorenzo and Marc Marquez, you know, both of their stories are pretty similar. You know, started racing at age 3 or whatever, and have basically gotten off a motorcycle since. But no doubt all of you avid listeners will find out a little later that Saeed's story is a touch more interesting and unique than that one.
It really is. It really is. You guys have to listen to that to find out just where he's been and what he's done.
Yes, exactly. But we do actually have some listener feedback after a couple of droughtful episodes without your wonderful emails. You know, as ever, motopod@motopodcast.com is where you can send all of your questions, comments, and all that sort of stuff too. We do love getting these emails, and if you're like Alan Martell and didn't receive a response, it's probably because we are going to read it out on the show. So here it goes, as I said, from Alan Martell. Good day, gents. I wanted to stir the pot, so to speak. I was listening to podcasts from September 28th, no idea what we said, where the hosts were talking about Alex Marquez. It is true, Alex hasn't produced as much as perhaps has been expected. It's not a reason to think he hasn't been trying. He will eventually get there. If we take Cal Crutchlow, for example, everyone seems to think that he's boy wonder for winning 2 races this year. Please give me a break. Cal has been at it for 10 years, or it feels that long. He has crashed, 7 or 8 out of the first races this year? Both races he won have been as a result of rain or mixed conditions. Wouldn't really agree with that, but we'll talk about that in a second. It will take maybe a few more consistent podiums for me to jump on the Cal bandwagon. Yeah, he has won 2 races, as the books will indicate. All that to say, Alex Marquez is still young and new at the game and gives him slack. Of course, yes, we probably should give Alex Marquez some slack. And hopefully he does come good. You know, we certainly do hope that all those riders who we maybe have a bit of a Debbie Downer on, we certainly do hope that they do come good.
It's not okay. We don't wish them any bad, though, do we? This is the thing. And we've had this previously. That the guys have come along with all the pomp and circumstance and have, to whatever reason, not quite delivered to what their PR or their teams or, you know, past results. Yeah, exactly that. Now, this is Alex Marquez's second season in Moto2.
Third. It's definitely not his debut. Isn't his third?
It could be his third.
Remember this.
I know.
It's his third because he won the 2013 Moto2 championship. Yeah, so it's his I'm an idiot. He won the 2014 Moto3 championship. Yeah, it's his second year. Just everybody, let's forget that I said that. Second year of Moto2.
Hey, mate, you do the editing. You can take out what you like.
Nah, I can't really be bothered, to be honest.
That's fine. It's all right. ways and means of changing that round if needs be. But no, sorry to throw the curveball in because I can't remember. But, you know, so he came up with a world championship under his belt. And he's had, you know, there's guys that have got to grips faster with Moto2 than Alex Marquez has. He's shown glimpses of speed. He just doesn't show any glimpses whatsoever of consistency. And now this isn't a slight on his talent. Sam Lowe's bins it more than Alex Marquez does.
More than anyone in the world championship.
So, you know, we're quite happy to give Sam Lowe some stick because, again, he hasn't really brought the potential that he could. Yes, he's been in the fight early in the season for the Moto2 World Championship, but his consistency is lacking. Quartararo is another one that we've leaned heavily on over the last sort of couple of seasons. And Alex Marquez, he comes up. His brother probably didn't help by saying, "Yeah, but my brother is quicker than me."
Certainly.
On what? A BMX? I don't know. You know, so the kid can ride. There is absolutely no doubt about it whatsoever. And I think there's more than a few people were surprised when he got the extension to the contract at Mark VDS for next season.
Yeah.
But he really, really needs to deliver. If he wants to make that step up and join his brother in MotoGP, it's going to be very difficult to get a... I would be surprised if you got a top tier ride, but certainly a potential second tier ride in MotoGP. He needs to do that on the back of a consistently put together championship and a top 3 finish in the championship.
Yep.
Really, in his second season in Moto2, he should have been doing that by. He should have been finishing top 3 this season.
Yeah.
Things haven't changed too much. You know, he's been overshadowed by his teammate this season and other riders that you maybe wouldn't have expected him to be ahead of him. He should have been there with Sam Lowes, with Tom Lutie, with Johann Zarco. For me, anyway, personally, as an observer, I'm no expert, God forbid. But really, from his potential from coming up from Moto3 with a championship, he really should be running consistently top five and week in, week out for me.
Yeah, and then on the subject of Cal Crutchlow, first of all, I wouldn't say that his win that he had at Phillip Island was in mixed conditions.
No, nope.
Sure, it came after mixed conditions, but race day was pretty dry. And then the point about Cal crashing out of the first 7 out of 8 races, I think that makes what he's done even more impressive. You know, since Saxon Ring, Cal Crutchlow has scored the second most, if not now the most, points out of any MotoGP rider. So I think for Cal Crutchlow to turn a season around mid-season like that is absolutely incredible.
And I agree.
And you know, you are right to say that Cal Crutchlow has been doing it for 10 years or what seems like 10 years. But, you know, he's been on, apart from the Ducati year, he's been on satellite bikes, which aren't...
Yeah, apart from people
really
falling off, he wasn't going to, you know, he got a couple of podiums for Tech 3. But, you know, if the four top runners at the time finished, it would have been unlikely that he would have got those podiums.
And he's also up against arguably the toughest ever MotoGP field. In terms of
course.
Valentino Rossi, Marc Marquez, Jorge Lorenzo, you know, guys like Andrea Dovizioso on their day. So
yeah. All you need to do is throw Casey Stoner into that mix.
And yeah, exactly. Would,
you know, you have, like you rightly say, and I read a piece this week about, you know, we don't really have aliens anymore with 8 winners in a season, which, you know, I tend to agree with that. But the most successful riders in the sport's history, you know, you're up against the cream of the crop. So to do what he's doing, I appreciate what Alain's trying to say. That there's always going to be a bandwagon form when you're winning, you know, when you're a Brit rider winning 2 MotoGPs in one season for the first time since 76.
Yeah, maybe
something
it was
like
first rider since Shane. When in doubt, just say first rider since Shane.
First rider since Shane, which was 76, 77 World Championships. But really, yeah, Alex Marquez, yeah, he is still a young man and new to the game. Cal's been on it 10 years, but he hasn't been in MotoGP for 10 years.
And also, I think that, you know, as I said, turning results around after that long does make it that much more incredible. Like
it really does.
If Alex Marquez, you know, obviously does Moto2 next year and then, say, does move up to MotoGP for 5 years, if he were to go from having done, you know, the odd podium like Cal Crutchlow, a couple of bad years, to then win 2 races, that would, of course, make his turnaround even that much more incredible.
Of course.
Because of where he's come. You know, same if next year Alex Marquez starts challenging for the Moto2 championship, that would be an incredible turnaround, because these first 2 years, sure, there have been some glimmers of hope. He did get on the podium, fair enough. But overall, it's been just, you know, not that outstanding.
No, none of this is ever personal. But you can only, as a racer, you're only, and the same as a football team, American football team, whatever, you're only judged by your results. And and Alex Marquez's results haven't been where they potentially could be. But when you look at Cal Crutchlow, as you say, since Saxon Ring, and it's 130 points, something along that sort of level, that's a huge amount of points to turn around after a pretty unspectacular first 9 rounds to the season. So, you know, chapeau to Cal Crutchlow. Judge him on his results.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, Cal Crutchlow is riding the best he's ever ridden, which, you know, much like Valentino Rossi, sort of defies the general consensus that as you get older, you maybe don't improve. But, you know, Cal Crutchlow is, you know, as I just said, riding the best he's ever ridden in his entire career, despite obviously being the oldest he's ever been. But, you know.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. It's, you know, it's quite a thought-provoking email. That's the kind of one we like. It helps us justify why we do what we do and what we say.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it's nice to hear the listeners' opinions on things as well. Ours certainly isn't the be-all and end-all of opinions. Quite far from it, really.
Yeah, exactly.
We're all the same as you guys. We're fans of the sport. We're just very fortunate enough to get to talk about it on a radio show. So, by all means, you know, send us your opinions in. Tell us what you think. motopod@motopodcast.com and join in the debate, join in the show. The more, especially as we come to the off season, coming, you know, pretty quickly towards the off season, we've only got 2 more GPs left, and we've got 1 World Superbike race left this weekend, and that's it. We've got the cold, dark winter months, so by all means, if this is when your listener feedback counts the most, by all means, put something forward. We'll read it out on the show, and it'll create debate, and who knows, it may create further debate with more people coming in. So, you know, we're quite happy to polarize opinion if somebody's got a big opinion on something, on a particular subject, and then somebody has the vice versa opinion, then, you know, by all means, we'll read both out and we'll let you all make your own decisions on it. So motopod@motopodcast.com, and we can have a look at those as we take the run up to the dreaded Christmas break.
Exactly. And speaking of dreaded, the news has been pretty much dreadfully quiet this week. We did have the official team entry lists for Moto 2 and Moto 3 come out. Obviously, with MotoGP, we know every rider and every bike on the grid. But the Moto 2 and Moto 3 team entry lists do make some quite interesting reading. I also found just sort of compiling general knowledge from Twitter, I've also assembled a list of who is confirmed and who is rumoured at each of the teams. So we will now go through that. And Dave, if there is any of those riders that you do want to discuss, then do chirp up, because I will just sort of go through them until you say otherwise. So we'll start off with Moto 3. Half the grid will be on Honda machinery. We have the Australia Iglesia 00 team with Bastianini and Aaron Canet confirmed. Leopard Racing with Juan Mir and Livio Loi, both confirmed. Grassini Racing with Fabio De Gianantoni and Jorge Martin, confirmed. Ongetta Rivercold, Romano Fanardi, confirmed. Jules Daniello, 50-50 there. We have the SICK 58 Squadra Corsa team, obviously the Paolo Simoncelli team, moving up from the SEV, with Tony Arbolino, who recently won his first ever SEV race. He's confirmed, and it looks like he's going to be alongside Tatsuki Suzuki. Then Honda Team Asia, two question marks there. Hiroki Ono, question mark. Kaito Toba, who is a front runner in the SEV and a former Red Bull rookie and former Shell Advance Asia Talent Cup rider. He could be there. Drive M7, Adam Norodine looks pretty locked in there, and he could be joined by current Red Bull Rookies champion, Ayumi Sasaki. Again, they're still on Hondas. Then there's the AGR team, which I had thought were down. Yes, they're down as a KTM, so this chart is actually wrong. But there's the AGR team, which obviously do exist in Moto 2, but it looks like they'll now be also expanding to Moto 3 to sponsor and help out Maria Herrera. Obviously, she'll probably still be involved quite heavily with running her own team in a similar structure. And then there is what is down as Team GB with John McPhee, also on a Honda. That's that team that was rumoured to have BT Sport support, but it looks like they've pulled out. But Dorna is still going to sponsor it, and it looks like the Racing Steps Foundation will be a pretty big driving force of that team.
Which is good news for Wee McPhee, and hopefully will inspire him to recover from his injuries from Phillip Island at the weekend, which we'll cover in the race coming up, and yeah, race coverage coming up.
Yes, and then we move on to the KTMs, Red Bull KTM IO, Nicolo Antonelli and Bo Benschneider, Sky Racing VR46, Bulega and Andrea Migno, Shedel GP, which will again run Philip Ertl, RBA Racing Team, Gabriel Rodrigo will almost certainly be in that team, because as I understand it, he funds quite a lot of that team, and then probably Juan Fran Gravera will stay alongside him. The Platinum Bay Real Estate team, they switch from Mahindra Machinery to KTM Machinery. Marcos Ramirez has been confirmed with them, and Darren Binder will likely stay with them. As we've said on a couple of shows, it does seem like Brad Binder, his brother and the Moto3 World Champion, has been campaigning quite heavily to get that team some KTMs. So it'd be odd for him to get that team KTMs and for them to then kick out his brother.
Been his brother. Yep. Yeah, we don't want that, are they?
Stranger things do happen. And then we move on to the Mahindras with the Aspar team, Lorenzo Della Porta and Alberto Arenas, the CIP Unicom Starker team. They'll probably have Marco Bezzecchi and maybe Manuel Pagliani, according to this. Then the Peugeot, which is just the Mahindra with a different badge. And they have Jakob Kornfeld and Patrick Polkinen, both confirmed for them. So that is the Moto3 side of things. As we can see, a couple of new teams there. The SICK 58 Squadra Corsa. Obviously, RW have disappeared from Moto3, but we'll get to them in a second. Some interesting new names, and definitely some old warriors like Bastianini and Antonelli, who really need to show their pace, in my opinion, next year.
Yeah, they do, but I think that's going to be it's been an incredible series this season. If you remove Brad Binder, who's been ultimately dominant across the season, when you look at the names on it, you look at Bastianini, Canet, Mir, Loi, Gianantonio, Jorge Martin, and Fanati, you know, the guys that are in there, and then obviously Bulega, Migno, Antonelli, Ben Schneider, they're all potential race winners. A lot of them are race winners. but a lot of them, you know, they can all fight for the win at the end of the day, and that can only be a good thing for the championship. The future of Moto3 is very, very safe, I think.
Yep, huge, huge talent there. And as you say, it does go into next season with no clear favourites. You know, definitely Bastianini and Binder and Fanati were pretty clear favourites this year, but obviously it was Binder who came out. And now as we step up a class, we do move to Moto2. The majority of the grid is still on Kalex machinery, but we do have a bit more diversity, which should really help things next year, hopefully. So Garage Plus Intervetten, Tom Lutie, then Car Expert Intervetten, which is sort of a different team. They look to have Ika Lukwona and Jesko Raffin. Mark VDS have Morbidelli and Marquez confirmed. Idemitsu Honda Team Asia have Nakagami confirmed. And Kyrill Idam-Pauwi is hotly rumoured to have that second seat. Bit of an interesting move for him to jump straight up to Moto2. But, yeah. You know, maybe he'll like the bigger bike more. In the Petronas Raceline team, they will again have Hafiz Siren. Forward will stay with Baldassari and Marini. Paginas Amores HP40 will, as we know, have Fabio Quartararo and likely Edgar Pons. Itau Trans Racing, who I had thought were going to Suda Machinery, but apparently are not. They will have Mattia Pizzini and Andrea Locatelli. Grassini will have Jorge Navarro. The Sky Racing Team VR46 have decided to go with Kalex Machinery. And they will have Francesco Bagnaia and maybe Stefano Manzi. But they do definitely have two grid slots, so that second rider is still up in the air. Tasca Racing will have Xavier Simeon. The AGR team will have Yoni Hernandez. Very interesting to not see AGR have two slots. Unfortunately, that does mean that it doesn't look like Steven Odendahl, the Moto2 European champion, it doesn't look like he will be moving up to the World Championship next year, which is a bit of a bummer because Steve...
It's a shame because he's had a good year, hasn't he? He's a good rider.
Yeah, and his Aragon wildcard was pretty impressive, and he is just an absolutely fabulous person regardless. RW Racing GP, as we said, they're not in Moto3. They're now stepping up to Moto2, and it looks like they could have Axel Pons, but, you know, that could be a team where maybe Odendahl could go. Then the stop-and-go team will have Isaac Vinales and Tetsuta Nagashima, both of them confirmed. Then the KTM team, the only KTMs on the grid, will of course be Oliveira and Binder. Really interesting to see how the KTM goes. Haven't seen too much about it, so it is a bit of a question mark there, certainly. Then the two suitor teams, so a total of four suitors, there will be Kiefer Racing, not listed here as Leopard Racing, bit interesting. Dominic Agata, as we know, lots of drama around that one. And Danny Kent, he will be their second rider. And then the Dynavolt Intact GP team will have Sandro Cortese and Marcel Schroeter. Then in Tech 3, we have Remy Gardner, whose father is still in Japanese prison, and Xavi Vieja. And then on this speed up, they will be expanding to two bikes as the QMMF team disappear, and they will have probably Simone Corsi and maybe some guy called Axel Bassani, who I honestly cannot say I've heard too much about.
No, me neither.
So yeah, so that is more or less your Moto2 and Moto3 grid. Most of the rides are secured. There's only five or so open seats in Moto2 and about the same in Moto3. Interestingly enough, Speedweek was saying this week that PJ Jacobson was under the impression that he was going to get that second Kiefer Racing seat, and so maybe didn't explore all of his options in World Supersport. But then Kiefer Racing decided, nah, Dominic Agata. So a bit unfortunate there for PJ. But yet again, you know, much like Moto3, Moto2 should be a nice mix of your experienced guys like Morbidelli, like Nakagami, like Baldassari, and your new up-and-comers like Bagnaia, you know, like maybe Stefano Manzi. And yeah, definitely some nice mixes in there. And as I said, hugely, hugely interesting to see if KTM and Suter specifically can break that Kalex domination.
It's going to be a very interesting season again in Moto2 for those reasons. As you say, you have the old guard and the new stages coming up as well. So it's going to be the big battle for top rookie in Moto2. That is a fact. And looking at the guys that are battling for top rookie in Moto2, that could end up all end. There'd be a little bit of carbon fiber lost, I think, in those battles as the guys come to terms. Few changes, as you say, in Moto2, Moto3. Not so many changes in MotoGP. That's almost, to the greater extent, almost as you were. Repsol Honda team remain with Marc Marquez and Dani Pedrosa. Honda LCR, they retain Cal Crutchlow and the Australian...
But, we shall quickly... So, MCN reporter Simon Patterson, just on the subject of LCR Honda, he had tweeted today that he was hearing a rumour that Cal Crutchlow could have a new factory offer on the table. Now, obviously, if anyone listening to this podcast knows, Cal, and as we've already said, Cal Crutchlow having an incredible season, and, you know, had this happened at the start of the year, were we to hear that Cal Crutchlow had a factory offer on the table, wouldn't be the most surprising thing in the world. But with all the seats, you know, properly locked in for next year,
yes,
it sort of seems that there's one of two options. One, the shock option of Danny Pedrosa deciding to retire. A possibility, but seems unlikely.
The least possible of the two.
Yes, or the slightly more likely option, in my opinion, is, as you were saying in our little pre-show chat, Dave, is that we get a bit of a Marco Simoncelli situation with LCR Honda, where Cal is, in fact, riding on a factory bike with factory support, but in LCR colours, which would not only be a huge boost for Crutchlow, but also for that LCR team. So, yes, we'll have to keep an eye on that one, and everyone be sure to follow Simon Patterson on Twitter. I think his Twitter handle is Denkmit or something like that.
That's exactly it, at Denkmit, D-E-N-K-M-I-T.
Yes, so we'll have to
see. No idea where that comes from. I'll have to ask him about that.
So we'll have to see how that does develop over the course of the year, if that rumour does come to fruition. Because, you know, even right now, Cal's bike is more or less factory. He got a chassis upgrade after the Brno test, and, you know, Cal does a lot of work for Honda. Honda clearly listened to him. You see a lot of Honda, you know, quite senior staff in Cal's box and talking with Cal. So, you know, he's already in a pretty good place. Plus...
Yeah, he is.
Plus, by not having a factory bike, the expectations aren't so high. So that could also, you know, help him a bit. Obviously, if you are on a factory bike, then he's going to have to win more than two races.
He really is. But there's still two more than Danny Pedrosa this year.
One more than Danny Pedrosa, and one more than a lot of people, as there's not that many riders who have actually won, aside from obviously the big guys, aside from the main four. Cal Crutchlow, I think, is like the fifth most successful MotoGP rider in terms of victories, because, you know, guys like Spies and Mullen, they all only had one win. Caparossi, I think, has had more wins. Biaggi's had more wins. Cal Crutchlow's only one win behind Nicky Hayden in MotoGP victories.
As a former world champion.
Yep. So, you know, Cal, as we said, not doing too bad, but we will come to that fully in a bit. In the last little quick bit of news before we go on to the racing, Italian journalists are reporting that Davide Giuliano has signed a deal to ride the Tyco BMW in BSB, which would definitely be exciting to watch. Hopefully we have the Davide Giuliano 2 years ago and not the sort of limp biscuit Davide Giuliano we had this year.
Yeah, and also interpreters all round.
Yeah, yes.
Both for Hector and Philip Neal and for Davide Giuliano.
Yes, a very, very Irish team. Now, as a native English speaker, I will confess to not being able to understand some Irish people at the best of times. So I imagine it would be maybe a bit difficult for someone like Davide Giuliano to understand them, and also vice versa. But, you know, I'm sure that everyone will be a professional and will get the job done.
There will be lots of pointing, shouting, and gesticulation.
Yes, exactly. So, as we said, we will keep an eye on that one. As always, BSB silly season is quite late for everything, and we'll probably find out most of those seats in 2017 as we build up the season, because lots of teams are still working on budgets and things like that. So now we come to Moto 3 qualifying from Phillip Island. Okay, first things first, the Phillip Island weather was fucking crazy. I don't think I've ever seen any race weekend so destroyed by weather. The weather was so bad, they had to cancel the majority of MotoGP FP2 and all of Moto2 FP2. And then they had extended sessions, and even then it was raining, not raining, and it was just absolutely mental.
Which we did predict on the show that it was going to be a wet weekend, but not particularly at that level.
No, I mean, it was just astounding, and just how quickly the weather would change. You know, if anyone did watch practice or qualifying, it was almost laughable at points that just as the track was drying, and, you know, just as Moto2 were about to go out, it would bucket again and then just wet the track.
Have to feel for race direction this weekend. They did a sterling job.
Yep, exactly. And all of the riders did also praise race direction for making the right decision and keeping everything a bit safe. Because as we know, it, you know, motorcycle racing is dangerous, and going out there when it is literally torrential rain is not the best idea.
No. Not in those very small contact patches. But as it came, it was battling through the wind and the rain and everything else. I think there was hailstones at one point as well over the weekend. It was Brad Binder that fired his Red Bull KTM IO to pole position ahead of Nicolò Belega and Gabriel Rodrigo. So that's a pretty strong front row for Moto3.
It wasn't originally that front row, as Fabio Quartararo had qualified, I believe, in second. But then pulled a bit of a Brad Binder, and his team had accidentally stuck in the non-homologated ECU software.
Because that happens, because they've got it with them anyway, so they're going to stick a non. Why did he even have it?
I don't know, but you know, it happened to Brad Binder with the factory team, so it's clearly a mistake that, you know, can happen. Unless both were, of course, deliberately cheating, but there is no evidence to suggest that they were, so we will give Quartararo the benefit of the doubt. So
absolutely.
He was sent to the back of the grid, and John McPhee, he was fourth, pretty noticeable improvement for him. Darren Binder was seventh, which was his best ever qualifying. Andrea Minio was sixth, he's showing well again. Jorge Martin, Bagnaia, Juan Mir in 10th, Bo Benjnader, Jorge Navarro not doing too well in 12th on the grid, and then Bastianini in 13th. Bastianini had a pretty rough weekend, fair few crashes. So then we began racing. Fabio Quartararo made an absolutely excellent start and was with the front group. Looks like maybe he had some potential to pull a Binder in the slightly more positive sense of that saying.
Can I just say, as much as I've given Quartararo stick over the last season and a half, he was outstanding in that first half of the race.
Yeah, he was really, really, really good and riding.
Credit where credit's due, and I've always said that if credit's due, they can have it, because it that was a fantastic ride in the first half of the race.
Mm-hmm. It certainly was. Unfortunately, in that first half of the race, there were also a fair few crashes. Nicolò Belega, he had contact with, I think it was Bo Benschneider. I can't remember.
No,
exactly.
It was Fabio Quartararo.
Oh, was it Quartararo? Oh, okay. Well, Fabio Quartararo, you know,
on his charge through to from back to front, you know, there was the odd casualty on the way through, and unfortunately, Nicolò Belega was one of them. But prior to that, turn two, Juan Mir, Khairuddin Umpawi, and Darren Binder went down.
Yes, and that was quite a heavy fall. A couple of them were able to restart, including Darren Binder, which would prove to be quite valuable.
Absolutely.
There was also a crash for Francesco Bagnaia, as I believe he came into contact with, I think it was Fabio Di Gianantonio, but I think Di Gianantonio in turn got pushed by Canet. It was all a bit messy going through Lukey Heights. But then
Di Gianantonio and Pecco as well?
Yep. Both of them did fall. But then a couple of laps later, it got unfortunately really messy as John McPhee lost the front going over Lukey Heights, which then obviously plummets into that right-hander. And unfortunately, because of just where he crashed and how he crashed in that corner, McPhee and bike went across the track and collected Andrea Minio and several other riders. McPhee got run over. I'm not going to try and sugarcoat it. He did get run over by Andrea Minio. And then also, you know, it was basically skittles. And then Enea Bastianini, he also got hit quite badly in the back after running wide.
One of the Mark BDS bikes.
Yep. I think it was Canet, but again, I'm not.
No, I couldn't quite make out who it was.
Sure,
I didn't like to watch it again, because it's just not a pretty crash, both for John McPhee or for Bastianini, even though Bastianini did get up.
Yes, yep.
Exactly. Pretty much straight away.
Yep, he did, but McPhee was clearly knocked out, and then, of course, the race was red flagged. Absolutely, you know, correct decision
by very
race
much so.
Direction there. But we did get news quite swiftly that both John McPhee and Enea Bastianini were conscious, which is obviously, you know, the first sort of major news that you can receive.
Yes.
Then there were, you know, various updates, and right now their current situations is that neither McPhee nor Bastianini will be racing in Sepang. John McPhee was originally diagnosed with a broken thumb and concussion, and everyone thought, great, you know, wow, how lucky is he?
Yeah.
But then a couple of hours before recording this podcast, it turns out that he's actually punctured both of his lungs and only has a 40% capacity in both of those lungs. So he now has to spend the next 4 to 5 weeks in Australia because it's unsafe for him to fly.
So he can't fly?
Yes.
Wow.
So
how does that come to light 3 days later? Surely you're going to be short of... Wow, okay.
I don't know.
That's
you know,
a tough one.
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, it also raises an interesting question about what happens when you do suffer a serious injury like that away from your home country. You know, where do you stay? I guess you stay in hospital. But, you know, where do your parents stay? It, you know, it makes a
difficult... Yeah, to people around you who are expecting to fly to Malaysia the following day.
Yeah, it makes a difficult situation, you know, even more difficult because there's now all these financial and, you know, potentially even legal considerations of having to stay in a foreign country for over a month.
Would that potentially come under health insurance and things like that?
Yeah, it certainly would, but, you know, it's what sort of... We know that, unfortunately, Moto3 riders aren't exactly well paid. So,
no.
You know, knock on wood, he and his family do have health insurance. And to my knowledge, Australia's medical system is not quite as bad as the US system, where, you know, if you get injured in the US and you don't have health insurance, they're going to cost you an arm and a leg.
Yeah.
You know, Australia is a bit more like the UK with the NHS and things like that. So hopefully from a medical bill standpoint, McPhee should be fine. But, you know, even for his parents to now be staying in Australia for 4 to 5 weeks, you know, they're going to have to rent somewhere or get a hotel, and that's not going to be cheap. And
not at all. No, it's a very difficult situation for them. But the main thing is that John McPhee is going to be okay.
Exactly.
Extended stay in Australia, unfortunately, for all the wrong reasons.
Yep.
But we wish Wee McPhee well in his recovery.
Yep.
On the restart.
Well, Anea Bashanini, he also won't be racing at Sepang, as he has unfortunately cracked 2 vertebra. So that is now the 3rd broken back that we've had this year in MotoGP alone.
Wow.
Because Miller obviously cracked his.
Yes, he did.
In Austria, then Iannone in Misano.
Of course.
Have there been? I can't think of any more.
No, but that's still 3 too many, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly, and especially after, you know, there had been so long without too many injuries, it seems like these last couple of rounds have really racked up the injury count.
Unusual with the back protectors and everything, although back protectors do tend to, they protect against overextension, don't they, rather than impact.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is more where these injuries have come from, their impact injuries rather than flexing injuries.
Well, certainly with Bastianini, because, you know, he was basically thrown off his bike, and then as he was, you know, falling, another bike basically hit him in the back. So, you know, there's very little that even the best protection in the world could do.
Juan Mir was very lucky with that at turn 2, because he was run over as well, wasn't he, by carrying an Umpawi?
Yes, he was. He was another one who was collected. So as you were saying, eventually the race did get restarted. There were some more crashes. Jorge Navarro, he crashed out. Maybe he was taken out in the incident with McPhee. No, actually, Jorge Navarro, he was taken out
by Ben Schneider, wasn't he?
Yep, Ben Schneider in the restart. That's where I was getting the Ben Schneider from. So Jorge Navarro's season sort of goes from bad to worse. Another DNF for him. Obviously, this one wasn't completely his fault. But, not quite the consistency we had expected from...
Something I just wanted to bring up on that there's some great footage of the crash. Thankfully, it was a relatively uninjured crash. But it was caught on one of the high-motion cameras, and you could see as Ben Schneider sort of took him out, as they came together, I don't want to particularly apportion blame, as Navarro lost the front and he went down on the rumble strips, and they're quite serrated at Phillip Island. And you could see as it went down, it was real slow motion. You could see his hand bouncing across the serrated edges on the handlebar, because prior to it showing that, he was looking at his right hand as if to say, shit, that hurt.
Yeah.
You know, no lasting damage, but you could see why it hurt, because he was bouncing along the serrated edge with still holding on to the handlebar. Fantastic footage from the high motion camera. But thankfully he was okay, but you're wincing as you were watching it as he went across each bump and it was digging into his fingers each time. Obviously it's quicker and they don't kind of feel it so much until afterwards, but you winced at every hit.
Yep, and there was more drama with the restart. Oddly, I don't think I've ever seen this before, but all of the riders who had penalties from the first race, not only was there Quartararo's back of the grid one, but there were your standard unsafe riding 3-place penalties, as we're coming to expect in Moto3.
Yeah.
So Fabio Quartararo...
That's why I couldn't work out. I can't remember when I watched it. I caught the highlights. I couldn't understand why Quartararo was at the back again. How can you be punished twice for the same offence?
Yeah, that was a bit confusing. And I can't remember another time where that's happened, but maybe it's just, you know, a storm of odd circumstances.
And he didn't get the pace again, did he? He certainly didn't go back to front like he did in the first part.
No, definitely not. Jorge Martin, he unfortunately stalled his bike on the lines and then had to start from second last place, I think it was. And again, Quartararo was again confused by that situation because he saw Jorge Navarro towards the back of the grid, so Quartararo didn't know if he had to go in front of him or behind him. But luckily, the guys at Urta were able to sort that one out on the grid. But what followed was an absolutely excellent race.
It was.
In the battle for third.
All 16 of them.
Yes, all 16 of them out of a 20 rider field. Brad Binder, he broke away pretty early, and Andrea Locatelli latched onto him. So those two just went away, and, you know, they were pretty safe from pretty early on. But yeah, then that battle for third was absolutely incredible. Canet, Darren Binder, Livio Loi, Jorge Martin, an incredible recovery. Marcos Ramirez, Ono, Daniello, Bo Benschneider, Noriden, Quartararo, Suzuki, all of those guys had a time leading, had a time up there, and they were constantly chopping and changing, and it was incredible to see. And, you know, especially some guys like Ramirez, like Binder, and like Suzuki, who you don't really expect too much of, they were really, really riding well. Clearly that Mahindra working quite well around Phillip Island, and in true Phillip Island and Moto3 style, it did come down to that drag to the line. Darren Binder was leading out of the final corner, but Aaron Canet in his post-race interview said that was the best thing that could have happened to me all day, because Canet just slipped past Darren Binder like it was no problem at all, and Aaron Canet took his first ever World Championship podium.
Right. Do you not think that riders do their homework before they go to these places? Because when was the last time that you ever saw anybody lead out of the final corner of Phillip Island and actually take the victory? To hold position, let's say.
I think for guys like Darren Binder, when you're in that moment and, you know, I think you scored points once or twice this season, and, you know, it's like 2 points in total. I don't think at that point in time you're thinking about, you know, the guy behind trying to play it strategically. I think you're just going, okay, I need to go as fast as I can and not crash. Oh God, don't crash.
Fair point. We'll come on to that in Moto2 then.
Yes, exactly. So Canet was third, Darren Binder fourth, his best ever result. Livio Loi up in fifth, Jorge Martin sixth, Ramirez, his best ever result, seventh. Ono Daniello, Benschneider, Adam Noriden, Quartararo, as we said, 12th. So not too bad from the back of the grid, but not quite the same. Incredible speed. Maria Herrera picked up a point. Lorenzo Della Porta, pretty disappointing, in 19th in the leading VR46 bike. So basically from that, Binder was the only rider in the top, in the top 10 to finish. So Binder finished, Bastianini didn't, Navarro didn't, Balega didn't, Mir didn't, Dejan Antonio didn't, Bagnaia didn't, Romano Fenati obviously didn't, Nicolo Antonelli didn't finish, and then Andrea Locatelli in 10th. Was the only
was
other
nearest
rider.
Challenger.
Yeah, so Binder's points lead extends now to 130 points, and with Bastianini now missing, can he go double Bastianini's points? Double Bastianini's points. He would need. He's more than. No, he's not quite double.
No,
is he?
Not quite. No.
164. Yeah, he's 32. So Binder could potentially score double Bastianini's points depending on how he goes, as Binder is on 294 and Bastianini is on 164, so Binder would need a total of 328 points. So he needs, 34 more points.
If Bastianini doesn't ride at
Valencia. Yeah, even if Bastianini does ride at Valencia, you know, a cracked vertebra.
Well, that's very true. It's still going to be be touch and go anyway, isn't it? I mean, that's just the ultimate dominant season, isn't it? It's an incredible return for Brad Binder. Against, you know, that is, it's a strong field when you look at it, and it's a strong field on paper, but their consistency just hasn't matched Brad Binder's in any way. And he's been faultless, hasn't he, apart from potentially Bruneau and one or two others dropping points there. So it had the potential to be even more so. But a hell of a season for Brad Binder. And it looked he potentially will extend his lead at Sepang this coming weekend.
Yes, you would think so. Balega is still the leading rookie of the year in fourth, but as none of the rookies scored any points, that battle is still only 7 points between him, Mir, and Dejan Antonio, so that'll be pretty interesting to watch. And yeah, that was Moto3. You know, interesting race as ever. Obviously, as we said, our best wishes to McPhee and to Bastianini for a speedy and hopefully straightforward recovery for both of those guys. Never good when you see a crash like that.
And, no, not at all.
Hopefully, we don't see any more crashes like that. We are going to Sepang, and hopefully everything is all good there. So then we moved on to Moto2, And it was pretty surprising. Moto2 had definitely been hit the worst by the weather throughout the whole weekend. Many of their sessions got cancelled, and it just seemed like they were so unlucky with the weather.
The timing was all out, wasn't it, for them? To be in, to be out, to be wet, to be right, we're going to go, and then our back tire warmers back on. The guys try and they have their rituals, don't they, that they go through. They psych themselves up. They want to be ready, they mentally and physically. And then to be sat back down again, and then to build themselves up again. It's the point where they don't know their ass from their elbow half the time. It was a difficult weekend for the Moto2 guys, but good for Thomas Lutie.
Yep, really good for Thomas Lutie. He got pole position ahead of Matteo Pisini. Pretty surprising that. There are a couple of surprises. Sam Lowes, he was third despite crashing about eight times throughout the course of the weekend. Sandro Cortesi was fourth. Jesco Raffin was fifth, coming from a guy who I think his best qualifying before this was 18th. So really good result for the Swiss rider, finally getting a bit of feel for the Moto2 in the World Championship spec. Folger sixth, Vieira seventh, Morbidelli ninth, not the best from him. Again, he had a couple of fairly big crashes. Took about half of Phillip Island's worm colony with him in every crash.
You have to take your hat off to Ian Wheeler, the potentially the hardest working, or certainly the most prevalent of the MotoGP paddock media managers, communication managers. Some of the stuff that Ian Wheeler puts out and gives you behind the scenes in, a lot of the teams can take note from that. Anything that comes back and some of the comments that he puts up make it one of the most popular team feeds out there, really. So chapeau to Ian Wheeler for that. And yes, there was an awful lot of mud that came back in Frankie Morbidelli's bike twice.
Yes, unfortunately so. And then Alex Rins was down in 16th place. Alex Marquez, he had a pretty big crash at the end of qualifying, and unfortunately he decided not to race because he'd taken, some pretty heavy blows in that.
He did take a big, yeah, he did.
It seemed like he and Julian Simon collided on the cool down lap because Simon had ran out of fuel. Bit of a wrong place, wrong time for both of them. But nothing life-threatening for Alex Marquez.
No, he did try and ride. He did ride in morning warm-up, didn't he? But then decided it was just going to be too much for him.
Yeah, which is probably a smart decision.
Especially with a quick turnaround again for this weekend.
Yes, exactly. And he's still, 50-50 for Malaysia, I believe. And then we moved on to the race, and it was a pretty, pretty wild start, especially if your name was Lowes. Lowes didn't have the best start, and then managed to crash yet again.
He did.
That was his fourth crash of the weekend on lap three, so he was out of the race. But it was Tom Lutie who looked in control. Once again, Franco Morbidelli was harassing him for the majority of the race. Matteo Pisini, fair play to him. He did stay up there for most of the race until he too had a bit of an accident with three laps to go. And
Honda hairpin catching out yet another rider.
Yep, exactly. But, really good to see Pisini up there. He's obviously one of the older war horses there. But, the battle between Lutie and Morbidelli was really, really entertaining. And, Morbidelli's definitely one of the guys to watch next year. I thought maybe he would accomplish a bit more this year. But in these last couple of races, he's really been delivering what I expected of him for most of the year. And he was actually, much like Darren Bender, he was leading out of the final corner. But Tom Lutie, the most experienced Moto2 rider there is, slipped past him absolutely perfectly.
The timing was all there, wasn't it? He's been there and he's done it before. He knew what he was, to win by 0.01 of a second. That's all it needs.
Yeah, exactly. An incredible win for Tom Lutie. The first time he has ever taken back-to-back victories in any class. And this is coming from a former 125cc world champion. So, Cal Crutchlow may have been doing it for 10 years, but Tom Lutie, I think, has been doing it for 15 years. And this is the first time he has taken back-to-back wins. And I believe this actually cements Thomas Lutie as the most successful Moto2 rider of all time in terms of points.
In terms of points scored?
Yeah, I think so. I think that was the stat they said.
Excellent stat. I like that.
Yep, so really...
Because you wouldn't have thought so, would you? But he has been around for quite a while, wouldn't he?
And he's always finishing top five in the championship. Sure, until now, he hasn't really been challenging for the championship. But as we said, I think it was last show, he's just so consistent.
What's the word I'm looking at? He's like clockwork.
Yeah, exactly. Swiss clock. Swiss clock.
Not just you that can do that,
Yep, I do have to try. But yeah, some other good rides from Lorenzo Baldessari. He did quite well to eventually finish fourth, having started eighth. Sandro Cortesi, incredible to see him back on the podium. Bit of a surprise as
a surprise, well. But it's good to see him back up there as well. Because again, one of he's turning into one of the elder statesmen of the middleweight class, and you know, somebody else who really hasn't really brought the form that he had on the 125 machines, hasn't really transferred to the Moto2 machines on a consistent level, but still, you know, he's a hell of a rider, and again, he needs to bring that consistency forward, especially with the new guys coming up as well. These are the guys to beat.
Definitely. Nakagami was fifth, so, you know, pretty okay result. Folga sixth, Axel Pons in eighth, pretty good for him. Johann Zarco, not sure what he was doing down in 12th place. Pretty disappointing for the still championship leader. Obviously, Lowe's, his championship is now, I think it's probably still mathematically possible. I haven't checked yet, but there's no realistic way that Lowe's can win this championship.
Not at all.
And Alex Rins now has an absolutely massive uphill battle, as Alex Rins, with 19 laps to go, suffered a crash and a DNF. Which is not what he would have wanted, certainly, when challenging for a championship.
No. Sam Lowe's, no. He's well out of it now. He's 64 points behind.
Yep, okay. So, game over for Lowe's. It is still Johann Zarco, who, despite that 12th place, does lead 226, but it is now Tom Lutie, who is second with 204 points, and Sepang is a circuit that Thomas Lutie really, really likes. It's one of his most successful circuits across all classes. He's going to be riding high on the confidence with first ever back-to-back wins.
Sure.
And he's only 22 points off Johann Zarco. And if Zarco's finishing outside the top 10, that gap...
He's had a couple of iffy results this year, Zarco, hasn't he? He's been dominant at some places, and you think, yeah, he's going to have this championship wrapped up soon. And then all of a sudden he pulls in a result like that. There is a small lack of consistency there as well.
Yeah, Zarco, I don't know, yeah, a bit strange from Zarco. Be interesting to see how this, obviously this is the only championship start for grabs, be really interesting to see how this one does play out, because, as you're saying, at points, you know, Zarco's been able to win three races on the bounce, and then, you know, have a 50-point lead, but then, you know, Rins will claw it back. So yeah, it'd be incredible to see Thomas Lutie do it. Obviously, Rins is now 3 points behind Lutie and 25 points behind Zarco, so Rins isn't out of it yet. I think that three-way fight will go down to Valencia unless something does happen to Rins. Franco Morbidelli has now moved up to fourth place with 177 points, and Sam Lowe's actually drops down to fifth place with 162.
Morbidelli's the man on the move, because Alex Rins, he's DNF'd in two consecutive rounds now.
And yeah, really not what I was. I thought Lowe's was pretty much dead set for a top three.
Yeah, he'd be lucky to get into the top four at this rate if he carries on like that. But, you know, he did say before Japan and after Aragon, what he kind of thought, well, and he did go on record as saying it's going to be win it or bin it, and I'm going to try my best. But, you know, you don't really want to be going down at turn two on the, was it on the opening lap, or was it the second lap he went down on? It was very, very early.
Yeah, it was very early. I think it was second lap, because it was only Hafez Sairen who didn't complete the first lap.
So, in that sense, you know, Sam, really.
He needs credit to stop crashing.
Credit where it's due? No, not this time. Yeah. You know, I've had some great rides this year, but, you know, the win it or bin it mentality is... Maybe he's got one eye on, or even both eyes on MotoGP for next season, obviously, because he's been testing the Aprilia out at Misano and other places. And, you know, maybe he's had his head turned a little bit, but, you know, you still have a requirement to the team to and the sponsors to do your best to actually bring the bike home. The win it or bin it mentality, that's not the way forward these days. And
if he keeps that,
it doesn't leave
GP,
a lasting.
It's going to hurt a lot more, even on that Aprilia. Sure, the Aprilia is not the fastest bike, but it's still a bigger bike. It's still a heavier bike.
And it's all time on board. It's all race craft. It's all learning. It's, you know, there wouldn't have been something that he didn't learn during the course of that race that would help him at another race.
Yeah.
You only learn racecraft by racing. You don't learn it by binning it on the second lap. I'll give Sam Lowe's all the props in the world when he's winning and being consistent, but throwing it down the road in two successive races.
No bueno.
No bueno. See? Wow. Just no. Really, that's not the mentality to go with, and hopefully that will change over time. And I know the guys a little bit. I don't know them too well. I mean, hopefully if at some point Steve English listens to this, Steve knows the guys really well. Steve, you can turn me around on this one. By all means, if you want to come on the show and chat to us about it, or you want to get in touch, talk to me about Sam Lowe's and the thoughts towards the end of the season, and we can share that with our listeners as well, because I want a little bit more insight into this as to why this has happened. It's almost like he's given up on the championship. Well, he clearly has now.
Yeah.
But to the lesser or greater degree, you know, third place in the championship was still a viable option. Yeah. And also to the team and the sponsors and everything else, if you can't win it, then at least, you know, if you're finishing top 3, 4, 5, you're still getting the TV coverage for the sponsors. You're also getting your racecraft and you're getting mileage under your belt as well.
Exactly.
So who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows?
It's not a downer,
it's just an observation.
Yep, definitely. And then, yeah, Moto2 championships are pretty standard. So because of the quite crazy MotoGP weekend we had actually some pretty incredible and big names in Q1. So it was a very, very, very interesting session. Cal Crutchlow, Jorge Lorenzo, Maverick Vinales, Valentino Rossi, all guys who you would not really expect to be in Q1.
Not at all.
And I believe it was the first time ever that both Movistar Yamahas have been in Q1.
Yes.
It was Cal Crutchlow and Jorge Lorenzo who did get through. Cal Crutchlow almost 2 seconds faster than everybody else. Of course, the track was drying, so it started off wet and then got drier and drier. Cal Crutchlow risked it for the biscuit, as they say, and it did put on those slicks before anyone else. So he went through ahead of Lorenzo. Vinales, pretty disappointing, ahead of Bradley Smith, who was ahead of Valentino Rossi. Rossi really not feeling Phillip Island in that qualifying session.
No.
Lavetis would start 16th, ahead of Hernandez, Bautista. Mike Jones, pretty incredible result for him to qualify ahead of both Loris Baz and Tito Rabat.
Superb.
Only his second time on that bike. Obviously, he does know Phillip Island quite well, but still pretty darn good for the Australian. And then we got through to Q2, and sort of the big story of Q2 was Jorge Lorenzo, who was
on a permanent outlap.
Yeah, who was on a permanent outlap and was 6.6 seconds slower than pole man Marquez. Now, Marquez's lap was a pretty special lap.
It really was.
Let's not frown about that. But to be 6.6 seconds, to be 2 seconds slower than Scott Redding.
Now, I was watching this. I wasn't at work watching this by any stretch of the imagination, obviously, because that's just really frowned upon. But if I happen to be not at home watching this in somewhere else that I get paid to be to watch the racing, I watched it with the sound down. And it's the bizarrest thing to watch racing with the sound down. Really puts a different perspective on things. You could see that the Marc Marquez lap was outstanding. There was no two ways about it. He, at one point, he was a second and a half faster than everybody else, and you thought, geez, he's just going to walk away with this Crutchlow.
And much like in Germany, it was slicks on a pretty drying track. So, you know,
yeah,
that level of risk added to it. Everyone would eventually go over to slicks, but Marquez was the one of the pioneers.
It was who had the biggest cojones the earliest in that respect to make the switch. But to actually watch Jorge Lorenzo with the sound down, so I didn't have the joy of Nick Harris and Matt Burt to listen to for that. But you could just see everything. He looked maybe scared, maybe a little bit too steep. But there was so much trepidation in his riding. And every time he looked, oh, he's on an outlap. No, this is his actual qualifying lap.
PB.
Yeah, PB, but he's making PBs all the way through, but they're still, you know, a second, you know, 3/4 of a second per sector slower. And for someone of Jorge Lorenzo and his metronomic and his pace and everything else, it's just turning into a complete arse fest at this end of the season for him.
Yeah, really, really just fallen away from Jorge Lorenzo. And, you know, he started the year as the championship favourite. You know, after those first, certainly two rounds, if not, you know, 3 or 4 rounds, it did seem, you know, and this Jorge Lorenzo is a million years apart from the Jorge Lorenzo we saw fighting it out tooth and claw with Marc Marquez in Mugello.
Massively. And it is also, to that point, he's also starting to stir up on Matt Oxley and Randy Mamola in their columns that a lot of people are now starting to point a fairly long and bony finger at Jorge Lorenzo and say, you know, what's gone wrong? What's the problem? Why isn't he doing this? Why is this happening? the spec electronics. And also, there may be an issue with Yamaha in general. When you look at the qualifying positions, when it comes to the race, it turns around a little bit. Yeah. But people are pointing the finger at a potential crisis at Yamaha, that the 2017 bike isn't ready, isn't what Valentino Rossi was hoping it would be, that Jorge's got one eye on Ducati and not sure what's going to come there. Also, very interesting, just as a quick aside, reading it yesterday, did you read the little article about Jorge Lorenzo and not wearing the airbag?
Yes, I did read that. I was sort of aware of that. It seems to vary from circuit to circuit almost, that sometimes he has the airbag and sometimes he doesn't. Yeah, so basically the article, for those who haven't read it, said that, you know, Jorge Lorenzo doesn't think that the 500 grams that the airbag weighs is worth it, because, you know, obviously weight means you're slower. And historically, Jorge Lorenzo not been much of a crasher. So, you know, had this been, the last two or three seasons, you can certainly understand why someone like Jorge Lorenzo probably wouldn't worry about it. Also, if you remember that crash where he was behind James Ellison at Valencia, right?
Yes.
That was caused by his airbag going off. Because
really?
Yeah, what had happened was he'd had a moment behind James Ellison, quite a big moment, but he saved it, but the airbag thought it was a crash, so deployed, which therefore turned his save into a crash.
I didn't know. Did you know what? You never cease to amaze me.
Oh, you know, I keep one or two facts for a rainy day.
Yeah, and it really isn't at the minute. It's maybe cold, but it's certainly. I'm suitably impressed. But I had no idea about that.
So yeah, and to my knowledge, I heard this from another journalist. So if it's wrong, blame him. But to my knowledge, you know, Alpinestar have, you know, pretty much admitted to that being a fault, and that, you know, they learnt from that experience. So yeah,
they must have done, because Marc Marquez didn't go off at Assen, did it? Or did it?
It did go off, but it didn't cause him to crash.
Ah, okay, it did go off. It was enough. That's okay.
But then again, Marc Marquez has a tendency to be above human.
Just a little bit.
Certainly before race day at Phillip Island, at least.
Certainly before race day at Phillip Island, which leads us neatly on. Did we do the rundown? Marquez on pole.
Yeah, Marquez on pole. Great lap from him. Cal Crutchlow again, front row. Really, really good result from Cal. Paul Espargaro, great to see him up there. Same with the leash. Jack Miller fifth. Nicky Hayden, surprisingly enough, in seventh place. Hayden much, much faster on the Repsol Honda here in Phillip Island than he was on the Australia Galicia bike in Aragon. Hayden really likes Phillip Island.
It goes left.
Yep. Also, somewhat interestingly, Hayden at no point during the weekend was actually in Repsol Honda colours. I believe it's Castrol who sponsored the World Superbike team, so my guess would be that... as sort of a thank you for Castrol letting him ride that bike, is that he was never in a Repsol top and didn't have Repsol leathers on. He was always in HRC branded stuff.
Excellent. So it was a purely a Honda thing rather than a Repsol
yes,
thing.
Yes, it did.
Also, when was the last time that a Satellite Tech 3 Yamaha outqualified the two factory Yamahas? Oh, no, I'm expecting an answer now. It was more rhetorical than...
Unless Bradley Smith has done it since, which I don't think he has off the top of my head, it would be Paul Espargaro's last front row in Le Mans 2 years ago, maybe?
Yeah, right. I wasn't even expecting an answer.
Maybe,
it was just a purely rhetorical question.
I'd have to check. But anyway, but yeah, you know.
So there's one for there's a little that's something we can do in the off season. We can get people to ring in live and we can have an Ask Harry session.
Oh, God. No. Please no. Only if I can have access to the internet in a 5 minute delay. then you can ask me anything.
And that purely, ladies and gentlemen, that wasn't edited and there was no time gap there at all. As we are here now talking, that was purely off the cuff. Well done, Harry. I wasn't even expecting an answer.
Thanks. But something we weren't expecting in the race was Marc Marquez blowing a pretty comfortable lead. He'd, you know, much like 2 years ago in Phillip Island, he'd gone off and was doing his thing out the front. Looked pretty comfortable.
Yeah.
And then, whoops, crashed.
Of which something he later admitted was purely his fault. He'd gone a little bit wide on the corner and missed his breaking point. And unfortunately, yes, Marc Marquez is human.
Yep, he did. He had his first big mistake of the year. Obviously, in Le Mans, he was able to restart and to finish the race. But
yes,
he did have his first DNF in the race. And, you know, as you were saying, he did admit that he was pushing too hard. He was no longer thinking about the championship because he doesn't need to. You know, had this been him still battling with Rossi and Jorge for the title, maybe it would have been different. But he did crash, which gifted Cal Crutchlow the lead.
And scared the shit out of him because he had flashbacks to his Ducati time where he folded the front with a 10-second gap. Was he in second place at that point?
Yes, and he was also on the same tyres as Marc Marquez, which did not help his being scared. Cal Crutch actually gave, in his post-race interviews, actually gave a really good and in-depth explanation about, you know, how he handled that situation. So if you haven't listened to Cal Crutchlow's interview after the race, I'd definitely go do that. And also the press conference, he goes into that a bit more. But then, yeah, Cal Crutchlow was handed the lead. You know, fair play to Cal Crutchlow. Before that, he'd got his way up into second and had done a stellar job at that. But Valentino Rossi, he was a man on a move. And by the time that Cal Crutchlow was granted the lead, Valentino Rossi was in second place. And I believe Cal Crutchlow's words in his helmet were, "Oh, fuck off, don't do this to me," when he saw that it was Rossi behind him. But then...
he didn't get near him, did he?
No, Cal Crutchlow rode an absolutely brilliant and faultless race.
I couldn't agree more. And it's not that this isn't the... Alain, this isn't the bandwagon. This is going back to what we said. This is about results and performance. You cannot fault Cal Crutchlow's performance in the race at Phillip Island. What a fantastic result for him. And the pressure of having Valentino Rossi bearing down on you for some might be a little bit too much.
And the worry of, you know, having crashed at Phillip Island in a similar position, knowing that your air quotes teammate or manufacturer mate has crashed with a pretty similar situation to you in terms of tyres.
Very interesting how he said that he pushed when the sun went in, but didn't push quite as hard when the sun came out, with the different variations in the track temperature and trying to keep the heat in that front tyre. It was a really, really astute ride from Cal Crutchlow. Not something in years gone by that you could level at Cal Crutchlow, but you see him now and he's a very, very complete MotoGP rider.
Yep, exactly. And, you know, sure, some people could have doubted, be it justly or unjustly, his victory in Brno because, you know, it's wet, so yada, 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 wet races, da, 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 da.
Yeah.
But he's now won a race fair and square in the dry. He's, you know, as we said, Britain's most successful racer since Barry Sheen in the MotoGP class. Two victories, which is pretty incredible that, you know, he's the first rider since Marco Melandri in 2006 to take more than a single victory on a satellite bike. And,
good start.
You know, and as we said, since the birth of his daughter, since Saxon Ring, he's been a rider transformed and is riding at the levels of the air quotes aliens.
Yeah, he is. And whoever said that having a child loses half a second is absolute bullshit.
Yeah. And as were the press still asking the same question after he got that podium in Germany, they kept asking him, "Are you going to have another kid?" And he even said, "You've already asked me this question." but yeah, no, really, really good ride from Cal Crutchlow. Also, an incredible ride from Maverick Vinales. Much like Valentino Rossi, he had to have a pretty big comeback. And Vinales on the podium yet again in third place. As we said before, watch out for Maverick Vinales next year on that factory Yamaha. He is going to be a force to be reckoned with.
He really is. For me, though, Valentino, I'm not, and the guy doesn't know, I'm not a dyed-in-the-wool yellow brigade or anything like that. But for me, his grid starting position and the age that he's at and the problems that they've been beset with all weekend, for me, rider of the day, Valentino Rossi in MotoGP. 15 overtakes, 14 overtakes, something like that. And all clean as a whistle. His pace was there from the very early time. And it was almost harking back to the Jeremy Burgess days. They found something in morning warm-up.
Yeah, really, really good from Valentino Rossi. It was also an absolutely thrilling battle for seventh place. Jorge Lorenzo, he had a pretty lonely ride to eventually cross the line in sixth place. But there was a great battle for seventh place between Scott Redding, Bradley Smith, Daniele Petrucci, Jack Miller, Nicky Hayden, until a couple laps from the end when Hayden and Miller sort of went for the same piece of tarmac at the Honda hairpin. And,
two into one doesn't go.
Yes, and Jack did have the inside. But before that, absolutely incredible ride from Nicky Hayden, you know, to come back and to be fighting for the top 10 after a fair few years in MotoGP not really being anywhere near the top 10. Good to see that, you know, Hayden still does have the pace. As we always say, he didn't earn that world championship for nothing. But that battle for seventh was really fun to watch. It was Scott Redding who did eventually win that ahead of Bradley Smith in eighth. Incredible for Smith, considering that he's basically racing with one leg.
Indeed.
Then Daniele Petrucci, Jack Miller eventually got buffeted back a bit. Stefan Bradl, then Bautista, Hernandez, Laverty. And then Mike Jones picked up his first ever MotoGP point with 15th place, beating out Tito Rabat and Dinky Hayden, who did remount to eventually finish last. But, you know, fair play to Mike Jones, as we say, beating out Tito Rabat, who's had a whole season on that bike and is a Moto2 world champion. Hopefully, I really hope that Mike Jones can get a good ride in BSB to then, you know, propel himself upwards to World Superbikes.
I'd love to see him over here. Why not?
Yep. I really, really think that these two rides have really highlighted a guy who has under 1,000 Twitter followers, which I was quite shocked to find out. But no, I think that there's a lot of talent in there, and hopefully it does show that, you know, Australia isn't really completely devoid of talent.
Of course not. It's not completely devoid. It's just not quite as prevalent as it used to be.
Nope. And Andrea Dovizioso, he also had a pretty solid ride to fourth place. Obviously, last year, Andrea Dovizioso basically had his pants pulled down at Phillip Island when he finished something like 13th or something. So good to see him turn his fortunes at Phillip Island around.
Indeed. Let's have a look. After the stand-ins, Scott Redding moves 6 points clear of Danilo Petrucci in the battle for the near-factory spec bike next season. But though Ducati haven't yet confirmed that rumour, so they may end up both being very disappointed or both particularly happy if they end up being two motorcycles in that respect. And if Cal continues this recent form, he's going to end up passing Danny Pedrosa for fifth place, which would equal his best season finish yet of fifth in 2013 when he was on the Tech 3 Yamaha.
And this is after Cal Crutchlow spent the first half of the season
on his
crashing his brains out. Exactly.
We've used the word an awful lot in this episode and in the episode before. Consistency.
Yeah. Imagine if Cal Crutchlow had been finishing, you know, 6th in the start of the season and then been getting all those points. You know, he could be challenging, you know, Vinales is only 40 points ahead of him.
Yeah.
You know, then Jorge Lorenzo is only 51 points ahead of that, is only 51 points in total ahead of him. You know, he
trade half of those crashes for top 10 finishes and you've got a good handful of points.
Yeah, exactly. He could potentially be finishing for the, potentially pushing for the top three. Obviously, yeah. If buts and maybes, but, you know,
Exactly right. But, you know, this comes back to the consistency thing that we're talking about and the smart racers and the not so smart racers that we've edged on before. But, you know, whatever's happened and whatever he's been drinking, whatever's in that monster bottle, it's working. And you know, all power to Cal Crutchlow for that, and to Valentino Rossi, the old warhorse, still showing the guys that, you know, he's not quite finished just yet. But I'm in total agreement with you. For next season, let's just see how well Maverick Vinales takes to that Yamaha and if it's to his liking more than the Ducati is to Jorge Lorenzo.
Yeah, exactly. I think that Vinales getting on with that Yamaha is more of a certainty than Lorenzo getting on with that Ducati. I think that if Lorenzo and the Ducati get on well together, then that could potentially be an unstoppable force.
I think so.
Whereas,
and it depends on what the Michelins do as well, and how they can depend on what tires they can do, what the construction is. Is it going to retain some of the edge grip? How are they going to be able to keep that that front with enough heat in it and enough flexibility for Jorge to use his devastating corner speed? His outright speed is not an issue. None of the MotoGP riders have an issue with straight line speed. It's in the corners where it's all won and lost. So it'll be certainly an interesting time. I'm looking forward to the Valencia test. That's going to be an early season marker to see what happens. But obviously, we're not going to know until the end of January for the Sepang test, really.
Yep.
A long time to wait, that. That's like next year, isn't it?
Yep, it is a long time, but trust me, it will just fly by. So Dovizioso, 7th, not the greatest from him, but, you know, much like Cal Crutchlow, he had a pretty rough start to the year. Andrea Iannone is 9th overall. He will be returning in Sepang, so Hector Barbera will then go back down to Avintia, and Mike Jones will probably stay in Australia. Alicia Spiger, 11th, not the best from him. Scott Redding's only 13th. Bradley Smith up to 17th ahead of Jack Miller by 5 points there. But, you know, good to see Miller back in the top 10 and, you know, racing towards the front. I think that was an important step for him after his injuries. You know, same for Bradley Smith, for both of those guys to be fighting for a top 10 after pretty horrific injuries. Pretty good. That was basically the MotoGP weekend. I mean, it was hugely dramatic. You know, obviously the weather made everything crazy. Then, you know, with guys like Jorge Lorenzo and like Marc Marquez having pretty tough race days, it proved that, you know, these last two races, sure, there's no championship on the line, but they are set to be jolly, jolly exciting.
And hopefully not the shenanigans of last year, thank you.
Yes, knock on wood that Sepang is a relatively straightforward and simple weekend.
Hopefully, scandal-free zone.
Yes, hopefully there's no polemics or biscotto. Anywhere to be seen. Obviously, we are at the 1 year anniversary of that. No doubt there will be some questions at the press conference about it, but hopefully everyone does stay nice and professional.
Let the journalists behave themselves and just let's look at the championship for what it is and move on and have a good weekend of racing.
Yep. And the best thing about it, if that question does get asked at the press conference, is Cal Crutchlow will be there, so no doubt he will have some smart ass answer to say about it.
He should be a mainstay of the MotoGP pre-race press conferences, just to keep the journos in order.
Yes, and I think that is all from you and I, obviously.
Indeed.
We'll say our goodbyes now, and then we will be throwing it over to Martin and Saeed Al Sulaiti in Qatar.
Indeed.
And obviously this weekend we do have the last of the triple headers, Sepang, coming up. And we do also have the last round of the World Superbike Championship in Qatar. As we mentioned at the top of the show, Martin will be there. So hopefully he gets us some stellar chats. He will be there Saturday and Sunday. So if you see him, do say hello. From my understandings, it's not going to be crowded, so...
I think that was more mainly aimed at Steve English and people like that who can listen to the show and who will actually find Martin there amongst the throng of people in the paddock.
Because chances are, if you're going to the Qatar GP and you listen to this show, you probably already know Martin. So
they're probably going with Martin.
Yeah, exactly. as we said, that title is still up for grabs. Sure, it seems highly, highly likely that it will be Jonathan Rea, but yes, motorcycle racing is unpredictable. Leon Haslam, as we've mentioned, he'll be there on the Pedicini Kawasaki, so who knows what he can do. And looking forward to not having to stay up all night and to having some relaxed weekends. You know, I'm sure that I will start missing racing, but a couple of weekends of just relaxing could be pretty fun. Thanks for joining me for this wonderful show, Dave, and I hope
I'm a little bit tired and a little bit not quite where we should be, but we shall be back firing on all guns should I be required next week.
Yes, certainly. And that's all from us. So now say hello to Saeed Al Sulaiti and Martin Darlington.
Hi, this is Martin from Motopod. I'm at a neighbour's house, Martin Bexon, a track day rider at LaSalle, and the LaSalle Superbike Cup, was it, Martin?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
That you used to compete, you have been competing in. But also, I'm very excited to say, with us this evening is a friend of Martin's, and you'll know the name, it's Saeed Al Sulaiti, World Superbike rider for Pedicini Kawasaki. Saeed, thank you very much for talking to Motopod.
You're welcome. I'm very happy to be here with you guys.
Absolutely. I was really stoked when I've been here 2.5 years, and then when we heard you were going to be in World Superbikes, I'm thinking... Because even though I'm not Qatari, I'm living in Qatar, so you have a vested interest in seeing the country promote the sport. You know, they've been a huge supporter for a long time. You must be looking forward to next weekend.
Yeah, well, it's going to be the most important weekend in my career, to be honest. Racing at home, between my friends and family, in World Superbike, it's going to be really one of the really important weekends in my life. And I'm very happy to be here and share the experience with you guys.
Yeah, no, it's I don't know, you do look kind of buzzing. You look like you're excited for what's coming.
Yeah, I mean, since I started the World Superbike, I mean, everybody was not expecting anything from me. Let's say the truth, okay? Even me, I was like, okay, I'm going to the world level. It's different bikes. I never tried this bike. It was really, really tough. But when I started there, the start was not bad. I was not the last, and I was quite fast, and I was in the top 17 in the first race out of 25, and I was surprised. I was really happy. So after all this experience in different circuits, to learn the circuit in 1 hour and race and compete with the top level, it was really tough, but I was doing good. So I'm really excited to race here in a circuit that I grew up in, and to see what's going to happen. I don't know. Maybe I will be the last. Maybe I crash. I don't know. But I'm really excited.
Yeah. I mean, you've competed in the Superbike Cup here before, but your international racing background was in endurance, I believe.
No. That was wrong, but okay. And I will tell you.
Okay.
Yeah. with us. My career is, I did Qatar Superbike for 4 seasons, and I started my racing career exactly November 2010. I finished the first season Rookie of the Year. The second season I continue again. End of that season, QMF decide to put me in Moto2 team in Spanish Championship.
Right, the series.
So I did 2 seasons there, like 5 races, actually not 7, because 2 rounds out of this season was at the same time as the Qatar Superbike, so I had to give it up and go to this championship.
Yeah.
So after this 2 seasons, I did endurance. I did only 1 race in Qatar.
Right.
And 2 races, I was a spare rider. So actually, I didn't race endurance. And last year, I was in CEV Superbike. I was telling the federation that I really want to compete in 1000cc because I felt it's my style. I went to Moto2 and I didn't like it that much.
Right.
You know, my style is different. It's a 1000 style. So they believed in me and said, okay, if you want to try it, then go. So I went with my teammate, Michel, last year. In the beginning of the season, I had an injury. And actually, it's not from the bike. It's really funny story. Yeah. I went to for testing. And unfortunately, I fall in the airport and broke my wrist.
Just in the airport?
Yes, just before the test.
Like a normal person's injury.
Yeah. Just walking in the parking, man, looking for my Mini Cooper. There is 1 million Mini Coopers, so I was really not noticing that there is a step in front of me. So I just fall and broke my wrist. Anyway, it was 1 week before the race, so...
Yeesh.
Yeah, it was 1 week before the race. So I went back to Doha and to hospital. They did a really good job. It's really one of the best hospitals in the world for athletes.
Mm.
And after the surgery, 1 week after the surgery, I start racing. Anyway.
Wow.
Yeah, and I did top 15 in the first race with a broken wrist. I was really happy. Continue the season. At the end of the season, I was able to be in top 6. And... second position on my category, because we were superbike and private superbike.
Right,
so on the private, I was second, third, second in the last of the season. And then QMF decided to put me in a superbike. They told me, if you want to go, let's do it. And I said, yeah, it's my dream.
And have you found the Kawasaki suits you?
To be honest, I didn't try something else.
Yeah.
I don't want to tell you, no, I want this or that. No. I never tried something else. There is a really nice bikes out there, but I never tried them, so I don't know. But I've been racing in Kawasaki with Kawasaki in Qatar Championship for 3 years, and in Spanish Championship. So the bike, when I jump on Superbike, it's totally different bike, but it's the way you sit on the bike and the position of the bike is the same as what I was riding the last 4 years. You know.
Sure.
So it was easier.
And looking back over this season, I'd imagine Laguna Seca will stand out because you scored a point there and in the slightly shortened second race. But at other circuits that you look back now and think, I really look forward to going back there because I really took to it, or some that maybe you didn't like so much?
Actually, there is a lot of circuits I really want to go back because I believe that we could be better. We just faced problems and we was not lucky. And we could be better. I only get 1 point this season. But I could get really, let's say, 5-6 points. But we were not lucky. And the experience played a big part of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was different weathers, a lot of things going on. So it was a really good experience. But I believe there's a lot of circuits that I really believe that we can be competitive there.
Yeah, I mean, it's... people always say when someone moves up to a different class or go to a new paddock, their rookie year, half of it's not just learning the bikes, it's also learning new circuits when people go from their national championship to an international.
Yeah, exactly. And especially, I'm Qatari, so I'm not European.
Yeah.
The riders in Europe, they know most of the calendar because it's the European circuits.
Yeah.
You know, minimum they know 5 circuits. For me, out of the 40 circuits, I knew 2.
And how did you find wet riding?
Nice.
Yeah.
Funny.
Funny.
Yeah. Actually, it's, I don't know, sometimes I really, really like it, but sometimes no. It depends on the circuit. Some circuits in the rain condition, you really want to stay on your couch.
Like, yeah.
You don't want to go on the bike. It's really dangerous, slippery, amazing. I mean, it's really difficult for the top rider, for top three. What do you think about a Rocky? So, yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
I like it.
I mean, people, obviously, we have this idea that when it's wet, it levels the playing field on the performance of the bikes, because we know that your Kawasaki is probably not exactly the same spec as Johnny Ray's Kawasaki. But at the same time, if you're not used to riding in the wet, which, you know, I think it's rained 12 days in my 2.5 years here. In Britain, it would have rained 12 days in my first 3 weeks.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, that different experience. But
yeah, the UK people, they are the fastest in the rain. Well, this is my experience with them. Okay, about the bike. Yeah, my bike is totally different than the official Kawasaki. It's even, it's even different than my teammate. You know, as a rookie, of course, the team. You know, I don't want to say the team is bad. No, as a rookie, I was expecting the team will not give me the best bike.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. Okay, but I showed them that, you know, I can ride a better bike. Give me and I will show you what I can do.
Yeah.
And this is what they did in Laguna Seca. They give me a better engine. That's it. Not a swing arm or whatever, you know. Just push me, I'm a rookie, just push me a bit and I can do it.
Yeah.
And in Jerez as well, the last race, they give me a good engine. And I reached until 15th position and then I crashed.
Right.
But, you know, it's really big field. If I talk, I will not finish. So let's go to the next question.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the ability when we talk to the MotoGP riders or, you know, World Superbike riders, and they're very polished in their PR. They've grown up through the different championships. I mean, it's quite refreshing to meet someone, because this is not your only job, is it?
No. Look, I rode my first bike in the streets. I remember I was 21 years old. It was my first two-wheel bike, to be honest.
Wow.
Yes. I was 21 years old. Nobody wanted to teach me how to ride a bike because everybody was like, no, you will die, especially here in Doha. Okay? Because, you know, it's the education about the bike here is not, let's be honest, it's not like Europe.
No.
It's okay, everybody now, I mean, it's dangerous. So nobody wants to teach me. So I teach myself in the parking lot. Okay?
Okay.
Rode the bike for 10 minutes, and then I called my friends who have bikes. So they come, I will meet you there. What's it? We meet up, and they're like, what the hell? I was like, well, nobody wants to teach me. Please, look at me. Am I riding okay? They follow me, like, yeah, perfect. Okay, thanks. So this is the first time I ride the bike. But it's not my job. I work in Special Forces here in Doha. Since 2004.
Yeah.
And from that time until 2012, I've been working. And from 2012, you know, when I started professionally my career in motorcycle, the federation sent a letter to my work that Saeed is representing Qatar. So please, can you give him the off days to do his championship? And my work was really great. I'm really grateful for them because they really allow me to go.
Yeah.
And to do what I like and to live my dream. So I'm really grateful for them. And now I'm in my motorcycle career. Whenever I finish, I don't know when I will finish. Maybe next year, maybe after 10 years, I don't know. Of course, I will go back to my normal job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool, though. I mean, we have people.
I know, it's strange for everybody, even in the paddock, even the riders, when I tell them that, no, I'm working in Special Forces, they start laughing. I don't know why. Is it stranger? Because they start their career since they are 3 years old.
Yeah.
Okay. For me, in 6 years to be with them, I'm really, really happy.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward for Qatarese young people. Because I believe they can do it.
Yeah.
They, you know, the motorcycle or the motorsport in general, motorcycle or cars, the Qataris really, really like it. But they need to get the right direction, how to grow up their skills and go in the motorcycles and, the championship fields.
Yeah.
and hopefully one day this guy is coming.
So this weekend, the Qatar World Superbike race, the only downside to it is it's the last race of the season, and we've got that horrible long winter with no racing, which I guess for you is an awful lot of training.
yeah.
But looking further forward to the future, you know, obviously having a Qatari racing in the home circuit, hopefully we'll get quite a few people coming along. And I guess you would like to promote the sport amongst the younger Qataris and get people starting before 21, and maybe, you know, we could see some more activity. Because,
some more talents.
As you said, young Qatari guys like their cars and their bikes.
Yeah, we all, when we were young, we steal the car from our dad, so, yeah.
Do you think we could see a national championship, maybe with a junior level, with teenagers coming in?
Yeah, now in Lucerne Circuit, the management there, and also the QMF, the Qatar Federation, now they are organizing a championship. It's called, I think, Lucerne 600 Cup. And it will be soon published, but now they are organizing the bikes and everything, so everybody will having the same bike. You just come and ride, so you just need to register, pay your fees, and just ride. So I think it's going to be a very good championship, and the first time they do something like that, so it's very interesting. It's better for the riders, so they don't have to buy bikes and prepare and the rules and things. So everybody will have the same bike, and I hope this championship will bring along of a lot of young riders.
And you knowing it's a level playing field also means that the fastest rider is the fastest rider.
Exactly.
It's not just that
his dad
bought him an ECU Commander.
Exactly. And also I hope that it will be a lot of Qatari riders participating there.
Not just 45-year-old expats Martin.
I mean,
I've just been quite kind to you. Martin, 45, haven't I?
No, it's good to have different nationalities. Of course, it's amazing to have different nationalities. But we are in Qatar, and hopefully, we will have more Qataris to participate and grow up in this championship. It's very nice championship to grow up in. It's 600 and in a very beautiful circuit. Why not? And hopefully we can see new people.
Well, all the best for next weekend.
Thank you very much.
We look forward to it. I'll be there. I will come to Box One and track you down after a couple of sessions.
Thanks.
See if you're still enjoying it.
I will do my best to enjoy it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you a lot for having me. Thank you.
Cheers.